Excellent. All right, so this morning, as Jeff has informed us, we're doing things slightly differently. And we're going to do a sermon in three parts. But it's less of a sermon and more of a series of stories about Peter's life. But I want to start by saying this. This week, I had the great privilege of being able to attend the International Congress on Preaching, which was taking place in our church. We were just hosting. There's a group from America that was putting it on, but there were pastors who were here during the week from all over the world. And so I spent 3 days hearing upwards of 18 sermons over 3 days, which I know for some of you might sound like Dante's Sixth Circle of Hell. But in fact, for me, it really was a great privilege. There were some really, really good preachers who were here and were sharing God's Word with us. And in the process of that, I got to hear a lot of different styles of preaching. And one of the styles that I really enjoyed being a part of, being in the congregation for, was that of a couple of the black preachers who were with us. And they really get the congregation going with a bit of call and response, right? So the congregation participates in the proclamation of the good news about Jesus. And I think that's actually really great, because as a community, we should be proclaiming that good news together. So it's not just me proclaiming the words, but you get to say amen, if you like, or bring it, preacher, or anything that perhaps might come to your mind. Anyway, I'm going to give you some hints, because we're going to do a little bit of that this morning. We're going to manufacture it a little bit. So I understand that it won't be quite the emotional level that you might have heard in other churches before. But here's what we're going to do. We're telling a few stories about Peter. And there are three words. There are three words that are going to come up quite a few times during these stories. All right, we're going to look at how Peter's story reflects each of our own stories. So here are the three words: fish, or the word fisherman, follow, and rock. All right, so here's what I need you to do, and we're going to practice this just quickly. All right, every time you hear the word fish or the word fisherman, I need you to make a fish face. Come on, everyone now, all together. There we go. Very good. Well done. Well done. All right. So when you hear the word fish or fisherman, I need you to make a fish face. Very good. All right. When you hear the word follow, I want you to shout back at me, follow. So if I say follow.
Follow.
Very good. That one's quite simple. You've done very well. All right. The last one is rock. Whenever you hear the word rock, I need you to do the Queen beat. So if I say rock, very good. And you can just do it once. You can just do it once. Otherwise we might be here all day. We might be here all day. Which was another funny thing about the Pastor's Congress. It did seem like you were sort of hearing sermons all day. But right, if you'll just do that once. So let's try it all together. I say rock. Very good. Very, very good. All right. So there's going to be a little bit of interaction this morning, and I hope you will enjoy that and be excited about it. Thank you very much. Rosie will take those. All right. So we're telling a little story about a guy called Simon. Simon is a fisherman. Very good. We're getting the hang of this. Simon's a fisherman from Galilee. Galilee is a... You're right, I said it again. Galilee is a region in the north of Israel. It's a rural area. It's not the urban religious center that Jerusalem is. And a fisherman had the job of getting up in the middle of the night when it was still cool and it was still dark, and getting his nets and bringing his nets out onto the shore and putting the nets into the boat. And the nets were very heavy. Put the nets into the boat. And we're talking about a boat that is maybe 20 or 30 feet long. So not a giant boat. Not a giant boat. And he'd push out he and his friends would push out into the middle of the sea and they'd cast their nets. Now, when they caught some fish, which wasn't always, this wasn't like a really steady money-making profession, what Simon has. When they caught some fish, they would then take them to the market and they would sell them. And it was hard work. These men would have been the rugged and the burly men around town, the blue-collar workers of their day. And they wouldn't have had a whole lot of education. See, the boys, and it was only boys in those days, the boys who were educated past the age of 11 were those who would go on to be the religious teachers, the rabbis, those who would wind up living their life in Jerusalem. But in these rural areas, most boys, like Simon, like his brother Andrew, like his friends, would have only had an education up to about 11 years old. So Simon's not the smartest guy in town, but he's good at catching fish. And he's at least good enough to make enough money for his wife and his children, for his family. But even though he only had what amounts to a primary school education, and I want us to take a second here. Because Simon and his friends, the ones that eventually become the disciples, the apostles, the ones to whom Jesus entrusts the message of good news, to take it to the ends of the world, those guys had no more religious or formal education than those who are in the top of our jam class. Think Miranda or Elsie or Natasha or Marianne or Luke. They've got no more formal education than those children who are with us this morning. And the truth here is that what is required of Jesus' call to follow... Very good. Just making sure you're awake. What's required of that call is not something that you need a whole lot of education for. 2 weeks ago, I and several others spent the week with 5 to 11-year-olds at Holiday Club at Cherry Hinton. And we found that even 5 to 11-year-olds can, most of them, understand enough to understand what Jesus is asking us to do, that Jesus is asking us to follow. Follow Him. And then last week, I had the privilege of being with part of our youth group, and then part of a youth group from another church here in Cambridge, at New Day, a group of 11 to 18-year-olds, and all of them understand enough to heed Jesus' call to follow. Shame on us if we ever think to ourselves, this child is too young. This young person doesn't know enough to hear the good news about Jesus. I made my decision to follow Jesus when I was 7 years old. 7 years old. My wife Brittany made her decision whenever she was in primary school at a holiday club. So I think it's important for us to remember to preach the good news, not just to adults, but to our children, at home and here at church. And let's proclaim that good news with an expectancy that Jesus will call them, and pray for them that they would heed that call. So even though Simon and his friends only had a primary school education, they would have known the prophecies. Even as young children, they would have grown up learning the Jewish prophecies about the Messiah. And they would have known about the Psalms that call Yahweh, God my rock. Peter and his friends had probably often called out to God my rock for salvation when the storms came on the sea. Whenever they felt in fear for their lives, they would call out to God. This is the guy, Simon, that Jesus comes up to one day, and he walks up to him after he's come back onto shore from fishing. He says to Simon and his brother Andrew, "Come, follow."
Follow.
And Jesus changes their profession right then and there. He says to them, "You're no longer going to catch fish, but instead, you're going to catch people. And you're going to catch people for my name's sake." But Jesus also then changes Simon's name. And that's the passage that Sophie read for us. Thank you, Sophie. See, after Simon and his friends, his brother Andrew, his friends James and John, after they had been following Jesus for a little while, he takes them away and he sits them all down. And he asks them to all pull out their smartphone and get onto Twitter and put in hashtag Jesus and tell him, "What are people saying about me? Who do people say that I am?" He asks his disciples. And they scroll through Twitter, of course, and, well, some are saying you're Elijah. Some are saying you're John the Baptist. Still others say you're a prophet of one sort or another. And they scroll up and down. But then Jesus asks Simon, "Who do you say that I am?" And Simon answers, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Hashtag truth. All right, we'll leave the Twitter thing alone for now. And Jesus responds to Simon's declaration about him by giving him a new name. He says, "Blessed are you, Simon, because God my Father has revealed this to you. So from now on, you'll be called Peter, the Rock. And on this rock, I will build my church, and nothing, even the gates of hell, will not prevail against it." So this is the guy we're talking about. And we're going to explore some stories about Peter's life. This morning we're looking at some stories that happen throughout the Gospels while Peter is journeying with Jesus. And I think it very much reflects the beginning of our story with Jesus. Jesus says to each of us, "Come, follow." And he gives us a new name. He gives us his own name, Christ, Ian, Christian. And he builds us on the solid rock of his own faithfulness. Of his own faithfulness. So how will we respond today to his question, "Who do you say that I am?" So, just before this story that Leda read for us, Jesus has fed the 5,000. Of course, it was far more than 5,000. But 5,000 plus people that Jesus has just fed. And then he sends Peter and the others ahead of him in the boat. He says, "Go on over to the other side of the lake." And Jesus goes up on the mountainside by himself to pray. Now, sometime in the middle of the night, Jesus, while he's up on the mountainside, he looks out over the lake and he can see the boat that he sent his disciples in bobbing and being tossed back and forth on the waves. And I love that this story in Matthew 14, tells us that the boat was tossed back and forth on the waves. Because what is the spiritual equivalent to tossing back and forth on the waves? James chapter 1 tells us it's doubt. The spiritual equivalent to being tossed back and forth on the waves is doubt. The one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. I think it's a bit of a foreshadowing of what's about to happen with Peter and the other disciples. So before the sun comes up, Jesus decides, because the boat's not making it to the other side of the lake, he's going to go out to the boat. Now, try and imagine for yourself what this would be like. Remember, Simon and His friends are in a boat that's not all that big. It's being tossed about by the wind and the waves. And just as the boat rises up and eclipses the horizon and then dips back down, they see a figure. And then, of course, the boat bobs back up again. And when it comes back down again, the figure's still there. And you think to yourself, wait, hang on. We're out in the middle of the lake. Why is there a person there? And you might think to yourself, okay, we've been tossed about by the wind and the waves for several hours now. I must be seasick. It must be going to my head. I must be hallucinating. And then maybe your second thought is, maybe ghosts really do exist. Because that's what they say. They think it's a ghost. When they see a figure walking out on the water toward them. But Jesus says, don't be afraid. Maybe in your life this morning, you come this morning and you feel a little bit about like the boat, being blown and tossed about by the wind and the waves. Maybe you feel like you're in a time of doubt in your own life. Jesus says, don't be afraid. Peter then says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out on the water with you. And Jesus says, come. Now, whether or not you feel this morning like you're a boat being blown and tossed about by the winds, Jesus calls us into troubled waters. Jesus calls us to get out of the boat and come out on the water. But here's the key. Jesus is already out there. And He stands out there with us. And that, I think, is the key point of Peter getting out of the boat and stepping onto the water. Jesus is already there. And the truth about rough and choppy waters is that when Jesus is standing there with us, the water becomes like solid rock. Thank you very much. But what did Peter need to do? Peter needed to keep his eyes fixed on Jesus. See, as soon as Peter started looking around and noticing the wind and the waves, he takes his eyes off of Jesus, puts his head down, and begins to sink like a rock. And this is what we do. This is what we do. We take our eyes off of Jesus and instead put them on ourselves or on whatever we're doing. We focus on our own feet and we sink. I think it looks something a little bit like this. Owen got a new scooter this week. And so he was practicing his scooting because he's going to nursery in September and he's looking forward to scooting from our house to the school. And this is what he looks like whenever he's scooting. Head down. There's a wall. All right. Let's reset. Good. Head down. And there's a step. Maybe try resetting again. One more time. Oh, wait, you think he's got it. Here we go, we're going to turn in the right direction. No, still, head down. Head down, straight into a wall. That, I think, is the picture of us. We put our eyes on our own feet and on what we're doing and focusing so much on I must get this right or that right in my own life. Instead of keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, and we just run into wall after wall. Or we sink straight to the bottom of the sea. So, unless you are a basilisk lizard and have this kind of ability to run on the water, then I recommend to you, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face, and the things of earth grow strangely dim in the light of His glory, in the light of His grace, Jesus turns the trembling water of our own circumstances, of our own lives, into solid rock. And He asks us only to keep our eyes on Him. So, Peter has been through a lot with Jesus when we come to this story. It's been nearly 3 years, and Peter feels like he's grown closer and closer to Jesus. He's also become sort of the de facto leader of the disciples. He's in the inner circle, Peter is, with James and John. If Jesus is doing something and he only needs a few helpers rather than several helpers, he's calling on Peter, James, and John. And Peter thinks that he's going to be the last one standing. Doesn't matter what everyone else does, Jesus, I will stick by you. And Peter tells Jesus as much. In Matthew 26, Jesus goes on telling his disciples about how he's about to die. And this is really strange when you think about it. I think it's just as strange as looking out over the edge of the boat into the water and seeing a figure walking towards you. Everyone's sitting around having supper. Everyone's having a good time. Everyone's celebrating the Passover. They're remembering the great things that God has done. God's deliverance, and Jesus is just sitting there bringing down the mood, talking about going on to die. The Son of Man, that's Him, that's Jesus, will be handed over to be crucified, Jesus says. And He goes on because this death that He's about to die will be a striking of the shepherd. Again, Jesus being the shepherd. And Jesus says, the flock will scatter. You will all fall away, says Jesus. Not me, says Peter. Not me. Even if I have to die with you, I will not disown you, Peter replies to Jesus. Now, at the end of that little episode, Peter's still pretty ramped up. I think Peter's adrenaline's going. He's thinking, we're coming out to fight now, right? Jesus is going to die. I'm going to stand by Him, and I know exactly what that means. So they come to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Judas and the other religious leaders come up to Jesus while He's praying in the garden, and they've come to arrest Him. And what was Peter's instinct? Remember, Peter's ramped up on adrenaline. Peter draws his sword. And we can be thankful, at least the young man there in the garden can be thankful, that Peter is no soldier. Peter's got really bad aim. Because Peter draws his sword and swings it at this guy's head. Except he's got such bad aim, he only gets his ear. I think Peter probably aimed to kill this guy. But in fact just misses and gets his ear. And Jesus says to him, Peter, put away that sword. And Jesus heals the man's ear. And then Jesus is brought before the high priest. And Peter, being that uneducated fisherman, oh, you're asleep on me now. There we go. Where's the fish face? All the kids have gone to the back. Very good. Peter, being that uneducated man, is stuck sitting outside. While Jesus goes in and meets with the religious leaders and the high priests, Peter has to sit outside with everyone else who is not allowed into that courtroom. And we all know what happens next. Peter's standing around the fire, warming himself. And at first it's someone that just walks up to him and says, hey, I think I've seen you before, following Jesus. Very good. I think I've seen you before with Jesus. Aren't you one of them? Aren't you one of the disciples? And Peter says, not me. Just like he just said to Jesus. Not me. And then a little girl comes up to him and says, no, I definitely saw you this past week while you've been in Jerusalem with Jesus. And Peter says, not me. And then someone who was with the crowd who came to arrest Jesus comes up to Peter and says, no, seriously, I saw you 2 hours ago when we were in the garden and we came to get Jesus. You were there. And Peter still says, not me. And this time he says, I swear to God, it's not me. Seriously, Peter? And the cock crows. And I like to picture, you know, probably the cock wasn't like nearby. It was just sort of echoing through the courtyard. I like to picture that the cock is like right behind Peter. And Peter says, not me. I swear it's not me. And then there behind him is the cockerel who's just crowed. And Peter goes, oh. And he remembers. Jesus just said I was going to fall away, that I was going to disown him. And here I have gone and done it. And Peter is broken. But in this story, bad things go to worse. Because after Peter's broken over what he's done himself, now just a few hours later, Jesus is dead. And for Peter, what is there left to do but hang your head and go back to catching fish? But God isn't done yet. God isn't done with Peter. God knows Sunday is coming. Jesus is coming back from the grave. And Jesus isn't done with Peter. So the final episode we get between Jesus and Peter comes in John chapter 21. And it involves the nets again. It involves a miraculous catch of fish. And I think most beautifully, it involves Jesus cooking breakfast for his disciples. And after breakfast, Jesus takes Peter aside. Not the three of them, not Peter, James, and John, just Peter. Jesus takes him aside and he asks him, Simon Peter. He calls him Simon Peter, as if to remind him that he once had one name and I gave you a new name. Simon Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yes. Jesus asks him again, Simon Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yes. And Jesus asks him a third time, do you love me? And Peter's broken again. Because I imagine that for Peter, since the crucifixion, anything that comes in sets of threes makes Peter feel broken. I denied Jesus three times. Three times I said, I don't know him. Peter's broken again when Jesus asks him, do you love me? A third time. But then the last thing Jesus says is, Peter, follow. Peter, I still want to build my church on the broken, fragmented mess of a rock that is your life, Peter. I still want to build my church. And I'm still going to use you to do it. Now this, I think, is where we can really see our own story. Is there a one of us here this morning who has not denied Jesus? Sure, we might have never actually said those words. We might have never had someone come up to us and say, hey, do you know who Jesus is? And you say, not me, I don't know who that man is. You might have never said those words. But every time we turn our backs on a brother or sister, every time we turn our backs on someone in need, every time we act pridefully, or we act out of greed, or we act out of judgment, or we act out of malice, every time we think ourselves good enough to do things on our own, we deny Jesus. And we deny Him the same way Peter did. We deny Him over and over again. Not just three times. Peter had the mercy of only denying three times. We deny over and over and over and over again. Imagine the pain that we might feel to meet Jesus and for Him to ask us, for each time we've denied Him, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And Jesus waits patiently for our response. But here's the thing. That's what Jesus does. For every time that we deny Him, Jesus offers forgiveness. For every time that we deny Him, Jesus offers us a second chance. After all the miserable things we've done, Jesus still says to us, follow. So what will we do? Who do you say that He is? He is Jesus the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And He calls us to follow Him. What will we do?